Offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. Joining you from our studios at the Sri Satya Sai Media Center, this is Prem and with me is Sai Prakash. We are here to continue our discussion on this beautiful book, Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, documented by Dr. Hislop. And even as we talk about Dr. Hislop, probably we'll let you know that this evening at 7:30 as part of the special satsang and talk series that we've been having over the past few Thursdays, we're going to have a talk delivered by Dr. Hislop himself from our archives, a wonderful and profound talk that he delivered, I think, to devotees in San Diego, in a center in the USA. So we're going to bring to you that talk. Many of those episodes that he narrates, we've had the opportunity to discuss here as part of this program and also the other programs, but it's a different thing to listen to it from his own voice, in his own words. So that's at 7:30. But for now, we're going to go back to this book that he has documented, his interactions, conversations that he has had with Swami and he has been a witness to in the interview room or elsewhere. Many things have been discussed. We are in that portion where something which is very interesting for youngsters is being described or discussed. Life in other parts of the universe or in other planets, that's what is being discussed. But even before that, there was a discussion on what is the purpose of life when it comes to the various forms and living beings. It's understandable when we talk about human beings, you have enough literature, Vedanta and other spiritual works, which tell you what it is to lead a purposeful life. But then what is the purpose of life when you look at the various life forms, animals, beings and life forms if they are in elsewhere in the universe? So that was the question that was being asked. But before we get into that and some of the interesting descriptions of events that happened in that same interview, let's invite Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sai Ram, Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram, Prem. Yes, indeed, it's a very interesting topic for conversation, and especially because there's a lot of cutting-edge scientific research going on in this. This has been a topic of debate for many, many decades. And a lot of research has been going on. And even a lot of fictional, descriptions of worlds with aliens, etc. And we have so many fictional movies and novels, etc. So the topic as such is very interesting. But there are a few sentences in this conversation where Swami makes some emphatic points. And sometimes when you read them and go through them, you come to realize that only the Creator can make such, I would say, definitive statements. Like even certain statements which has not been proven by science as yet. But Swami makes it so casually because He knows the secrets, the mysteries of creation. In fact, this morning I happened to listen to one of those discourses in the 1993 summer showers. And Swami is speaking about the different systems of the Hindu philosophy. Mm-hmm. And in the introduction to that, Swami is saying, nobody can understand the mystery of creation. Nobody can understand the mystery of creation, and it is just beyond human understanding. Only the Creator alone knows the mystery. So that's what it is. Like even when you start exploring topics like life on other planets, how can we say with surety that there is life or there is no life? Only Bhagwan can say that. Mm-hmm. And I think some of those topics will be discussed today.
Right. You know, when you talk about Swami making declarations which are yet to be proven by science.
Right.
One thing which always comes to mind is when Swami says 84 lakh species, mm-hmm. right? The estimate given by science is much, much lower than that.
Oh, okay.
And I've heard some people speak of that. You know, Swami says 84 lakh, but you know, science doesn't say that. Mm. Because, you know, over the many years, we have kind of, you're a student of biosciences, so am I initially.
Right.
Taxonomy and numerology, taxonomy. Where you kind of put all the species and genus into different categories.
Correct.
So the kind of studies that is done gives a much lower number. Mm. And very recently, not very recently, but about 10 years ago, around 2010-11, a new study which came out, what they've done is, what are the different missing links in the various such genus and species.
Okay.
If you calculate all of that, and they've come up now with a figure which says there are 8.7 million species likely.
Oh.
Right? So, I mean, Swami has been saying this from 1950s, 84 lakh species. That's almost like, a statement that always Swami makes. And now science is saying that give or take 1 million this way, that way, there are about 87 lakh species.
Very interesting, because there's another very interesting thing which Swami mentioned. And I remember this because I was involved in that incident in a way. Mm-hmm. This was in Kodaikanal. And Swami was giving a talk, like listeners might have heard from many of our guests here, about how the life in Kodaikanal is. Mm. The moment you get up in the morning, Swami comes, and then after darshan, there is one session where Swami is speaking to us, and then there is lunch, and before tiffin, there is another session.
Right.
Then evening before dinner, there is another session, and one session upstairs before Swami comes down. So these are different sessions where different things happen. Sometimes Swami asks somebody to speak, or Swami is speaking, or if Swami has given a discourse in the bhajan hall, sometimes the topics spill over from there and Swami continues to give the talk. Very beautiful topics. And one such in the year 1999, when we were there with Swami, Swami made a very casual statement. He said, why is coconut considered very good for memory?
Mm-hmm.
Why does the elephant have such wonderful memory, and it eats coconut, and then coconut is considered very good for improving your memory? And then Swami said, because it has radium in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he made this statement, and so it was translated, and it was a part of something very big, and everything got over. And then a day or so later, in the dining hall, there was some dish with coconut in it, and then Swami said, see, coconut, why is coconut so special? Swami asked that question, and I raised my hand. In the dining hall. And Swami said, Chappu. Then I said, Swami has said that it has radium in it. Ha, correct. It has radium, but scientists have not yet found that out.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists have not yet found that out, but it has got radium in it. So I remember that very clearly, because these are mysteries which we can't understand.
Another episode that I recall is one of my teachers in Vrindavan telling that when Swami was giving a discourse, I think, I don't remember whether it's a public discourse or Swami was talking to the students, where Swami was saying why he insists on this discipline that people should have a clean shaven face.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then Swami said, see, there are some health benefits also to that. And then Swami said, see, your face and the facial skin is closest to your nose.
Mm.
And if you have facial hair, Swami said, some chemicals are released from the skin. And Swami named a few.
Okay.
And one I recall, I don't remember what else Swami said, was acetone.
Right? Okay.
Swami said chemicals like this, that, and acetone and all are released. And you end up inhaling that, which is not very good. Swami very casually said this. And one of the science students was telling that a few months later, in one of the scientific journal, he found the same data.
Wow.
That, scientists have found that facial hair and acetone was mentioned as one of the chemicals.
Yeah. No, so Swami is saying it's not possible for us to fully comprehend the mysteries of the creation. But when the Creator himself chooses to reveal certain aspects, it's very interesting. So I think we can go to this portion.
And the whole portion is about, one thing is the spiritual aspect and the awe-inspiring aspect of creation and Swami revealing some of these things.
Right.
Because the spiritual grounding of this entire discussion is that question on buddhi, where Hislop asks, if the other beings of the universe are lacking in conscience or intellect, then how can they realize their destiny? Because Swami says that that's the standout blessing that the human race has of this intellect or buddhi. To which Swami says, they each have their own means of fulfilling destiny. Just as man has his means, man measures and judges by what he knows of himself. To man, it seems impossible that beings could live in circumstances unlike his own, whereas in fact, countless beings live within the unimaginable heat of the sun. Other multitudes live in the cold of ice. At this very point, Swami, jamming his thumb down on the arms of his chair, said, there are countless multitudes of beings. There is life in every place throughout the cosmos. Wherever God is, there is life. Right? That's a very profound and beautiful statement.
Right.
And again, this is something that we've heard Swami mention in discourses. In the core of the sun also, there are beings.
Correct.
Right.
And Swami would say, even great scientists like Hiranyaksha, for example, he would say that today's scientists have gone only till the moon. But
right.
Hiranyaksha was a great scientist and he went till the sun and he performed his scientific discoveries there in the sun. I mean, these are so wonderful to listen to. But this portion, he says it's very difficult for us to understand. Here he says that we have a certain understanding of fulfilling our destiny, but we are not able to imagine what is the kind of thought process that life forms have other than us to fulfill their own destinies.
Right. In fact, there's this very beautiful series brought out by BBC.
Mm-hmm.
You all have seen it, I think, in the commentary of David Attenborough.
Yes.
Planet Earth.
Planet Earth.
Right? In that, there's one portion where they go into some of the deepest caves ever to be visited by human beings.
Mm.
There he says that some of these species had never been seen.
Mm.
Because we have never imagined that in such a place where there's such low oxygen saturation and there are some aquatic forms which don't have sight at all.
Mm.
Because there is no light over there.
Mm.
They've evolved over millions of years not having the necessity for sight, because they live in pitch dark and there is no point in having that faculty of seeing.
Mm.
So you're saying, and these are forms that we have never seen. We have
right.
lived for millions of years, but we have never seen.
Mm.
So as Swami is saying here, we have an imagination of, I think we had discussed this last time also, that we need a certain temperature, we need a certain distance from the sun so that the UV radiation is less.
Mm.
We are taught this in geography,
hmm.
that if the earth was even a degree closer to the sun or off its scale, then the whole environment becomes inhospitable.
Exactly.
And Swami is saying that you think that this is the only condition in which
life form can
live, but
right.
very beautiful statement. Wherever God is, there is life.
Hmm.
And where there is, where can you say that God is not
God
there?
Is not. In fact, one more thought which comes to mind is when Swami changed it from loka samasta to samasta loka.
Right.
So he said, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, let there be peace and happiness in all the worlds. So possibly there are life forms praying for peace and happiness in different worlds. Who can say?
Right. And then Hislop asked this question. There seems to be something about earth. Life that is different. Life is different in a different way. Swami, the Lord himself is giving pointed attention to life here. Is there any other place in the universe where Baba needs to give such pointed attention? And Swami responds, there is no life apart from God's beingness. God is everywhere at all times. Man sees him as an all-powerful being with human form, whereas to a frog, he would appear to be a giant frog, and so on. Again, a statement that we've heard from Swami before.
Right.
That we create God in our own image.
Hmm.
But this, if you could put it as the path of looking at God, adoring God, revering him as I think that beautiful discourse that we had come through in 1991 Sambhukos,
mm-hmm.
where Swami speaks about man's conception of God.
Right, the very first discourse.
Yes. You know, where Swami says that whatever was his ability or his limitation, man looked at God as somebody who does not have that limitation.
Mm.
Man can be only at one place at one time, so he thought that God must be a being that can be at all places at all times. Man can have only the amount of strength and power the body can hold, so then God must be someone who has unlimited power. And so that way of looking at God as a super form of your own form,
mm-hmm.
right? Swami says, from there begins the exploration of God. And I think the highest understanding is what Swami is stating here, that that beingness itself is God.
Mm.
As Swami would say, that isness,
yes,
astitva, asmitva, it's said in some Upanishads, that state of being.
That is chit, right? If I'm not mistaken. Sat chit.
Right. Sat itself, I think. Sat itself is beingness.
Mm.
Chit is awareness and ananda is bliss.
Sat is the beingness, right. So I think here Swami is saying there is no life apart from God's beingness. You know, sometimes, like for example, we are now talking about the study of life in different parts of the universe and of creation. This has been, as we mentioned, a topic of a lot of scientific research. And I was just going through some articles, brought out by NASA and all that. There's a very interesting article which kind of brings out certain points. It's very interesting because they say that even today, with all our technology that we have, we have not been able to pinpointedly say that life exists outside Earth. And Enrico Fermi is supposed to have asked this question, where is everybody? Where is everybody? We are talking about aliens. We have spoken about them in our poems, in our fictions, in our movies and everywhere. But we just don't see them. So it's not necessary that they are like us or they are in the form that we have created. And I believe in 1961, Frank Drake is an astronomer who made a Drake's List. Basically, this list puts down all the conditions that are necessary for life,
mm-hmm.
in outer space or in other planets. So what they're called exoplanets. These are exoplanets which are going around other planets or other stars, mm-hmm. in different parts of the cosmos. So many of the conditions that he had put down in his list were just not being fulfilled. Then they said, okay, let us simplify it further. And then they came up with what is called as the habitable zone. So one of the main criterions of this habitable zone is to be able to find liquid water. So they say that because life is thriving on Earth because of water and the way life has evolved, it started with the evolution of once water was formed, and that's how life came into came on Earth. So they say that possibly liquid water is one of the most important criterion. Then, so they said, we have still not got the technology to check on some of these exoplanets, which are very far off, whether there is life. But then again, some scientists say that maybe life forms are using some other liquid or some other gas for sustenance, not necessarily water, liquid water. So as far as science is concerned, they're just guessing and they're just putting these theories forward that possibly they are sustained, life is being sustained by some other gas or by some other means. And some of the scientists are saying, my God, this creation has been around for billions of years and still we don't see life elsewhere. When are we actually going to meet them, this, that? But as Swami is saying, they have their own existence. They have their own destinies to fulfill and they have their own ways. In I think the previous section, Swami said, all life, the purpose of all life is to go back to the Creator from where it has sprung up. So the way of their destiny, the approach of their destiny is kind of very different from the path that we take.
Right. It doesn't cease to fascinate us, you know, the idea of life. As you're saying, if you remove the concept of life in other planets and aliens, 80% of our English movies would just vanish.
Right.
With all the fascinating imagination that it has given life to.
Right.
But then there is another revelation that comes here,
where
Hislop says, "I still don't see how other beings realize their destiny when they do not have the instruments of intellect and conscience." Because this is a continuation of the previous discussion. Swami says, "Other beings do not worry about achieving their destiny. They live happily within nature. For example, fish live and sport in water without anxiety to be other than they are. Throughout the universe, beings achieve their own destiny through their own unique inherent nature. But only man transcends his human self-conscious humanity to self-consciously realize his divinity."
Hmm.
So as you were just mentioning before I read out that, the progress from one species to the other, Swami would say, going back to that 84 lakh species.
Right.
Swami would say, you've come through each one of these forms and you've come through them believing that that's what is your destiny. And in a very automated fashion, you live through that particular life and you go to the next form. There's one very beautiful work in Tamil. I'm not getting it. I think one of Manikvasagar's famous work, where he says, "I've come through these different forms."
Okay.
He says, "I've been a stone, I've been a plant, I've been a worm, I've been a bird." He says, "Each time I thought that was my home." Meaning that that's where I belonged, right? As Swami is telling here, they go through that destiny without seeing that there is something beyond that. They consider that alone as what they are meant to be. So he says, "I came through all of these various forms thinking that that is my home. And today I've come to this human body. And when I see your feet, my Lord, I realize that that is my home. That is my destiny. And now I'm striving to transcend this human nature of mine." Right? As Swami is saying, I mean, this is the first time where you're given the opportunity. As Swami would tell in his discourses, the human birth is like a cusp where you can slip back into animal nature, or you can live a human nature, or you can transcend human nature and become divine. And that's what Swami is speaking about here. And that ability to transcend is dependent on buddhi, as Swami was saying here.
In fact, there's also a very interesting because these topics are on the borderline between science, perception, reality and consciousness and, you know, metaphysics and psychology to a certain extent. So these are all topics, you know, all these sciences deal with these topics. And all of us have heard about Edgar Cayce.
Right.
So Edgar Cayce is this clairvoyant who lived between March 1887 to 3rd January 1945. One thing very interesting about, because what would happen is if people had some problems or they had some issues, they would go to Edgar Cayce and he would go into a sort of trance and he would reveal things about that particular person, which will give them clues of why they are going through this particular condition. And he would possibly suggest that you could do something to get over this current condition, and that's why he became very popular and very famous. And one thing very interesting from all his readings, he says that he always starts his reading, these are called readings, because then he goes into a trance and he starts talking about every entity or every person who has come to him. He starts talking about the connection of that person with the universe. And he says, yes, we have the entity here. And those relations with the universe and universal forces as are latent and exhibited in the present entity. So you are not just a person as you are, but you are a collection of influences from the entire universe. That is one part of the thing. And then he follows it up with astrological conditions and aspects and all that. So what they say is Edgar Cayce used astrological concepts to explain the soul patterns, incarnations, whether these past lives were on Earth or on other planets or solar systems in this solar system. So he says some of these are not three-dimensional. There are different dimensions. So in his clairvoyant messages, he talks about different worlds and possibly, and his take on astrology is very different, because he says that astrology is more of a description of your past rather than what is future.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Indian system of astrology calculates the positions of planets and stars at the time of your birth and gives you a glimpse into what your future is going to be. But Edgar Cayce said that the current astrology is actually talking about your past lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so he used this information and this current location of planets, etc., to talk about your previous lives. And this is where he actually hints on lives on different planets and life on different dimensions and life in different solar systems. So it's all very mystical. Mm. I mean, I'm sure when he's not in his trance, when you talk to him, he might not actually think about it. But in that state of trance, he's able to talk about these things. So, I mean, that is the closest as far as science gets to understanding life on other planets, isn't it?
Right. And then, actually, Hislop goes on to ask a question, which I think, as he's himself saying, that he's been asked this question many times.
Mm-hmm.
Hislop says, Swami, a question I'm constantly asked and which I'm unable to answer.
Mm.
That is, about UFOs being from other planets visiting us here.
Mm.
This is a big thing in the USA. Books are published about it and there is all sorts of verified evidence.
Mm.
Swami's reply to that is, it is all imagination only. And Hislop says, but Swami, there is evidence.
Mm.
The metal of a crashed spacecraft in the hands of the government.
Mm.
People are examined by qualified specialists and they are not inventing their experiences.
Mm.
When I tell questioners that it is all imagination, the persons who ask are unable to accept the answer. Swami replies, nevertheless, it is imagination. Imagination can project physical evidence. There is life in every place, and those societies have their own cultures.
Mm.
They have no interest whatsoever in the earth or about earth's society. They do not visit the earth. So as we were telling, something again so emphatically and clearly can be told only by Swami. First he says that wherever God is, there is life.
Right.
And you cannot restrict it only to this planet. But at the same time, this leading to so many ideas. In fact, I was just looking up, you know, what is this that Hislop is talking about? Metal piece which is there with the government.
Okay.
And I think periodically this has been there.
Mm-hmm.
That where apparently, there are departments in the U.S. defense, set up completely dedicated only to studying this kind of UFOs and material that they cannot source to any place on Earth, where they found some metal wreckage. They're saying that alloy is not to be found anywhere. We're not able to say which metal it is.
Mm.
And so it is a UFO. And I think very periodically, 1945, I think some wreckage was found. Sometime in the 60s also, right, some wreckage has been found.
Mm.
And there are some secret vaults where these have been kept and all that. Enormous amount of literature. I think when we were students, one of the things which used to fascinate people is books about these kind of things.
Correct.
UFOs. And even now, I think there are any number of documentaries and movies about UFOs. And Swami is clearly dismissing all of that and saying it's all only imagination.
Your imagination.
Nothing like that has happened.
Mm. See, it's here when we see what Swami is telling, there are two things that come to mind. One is, Swami is of course saying that it is pure imagination. And then he says that imagination can project physical evidence. See, that is a sudden statement in amidst all this. He says, imagination can project physical evidence. And I'm sure there are, you know, a lot of studies going on. And, you know, people who talk about well-being, people who talk about life coaches, they always say, imagine what you want to become, what you want to become. Belief creates biology. All these things. There are so many branches of science which are talking about this. And one thing which strikes me as very interesting in the course of this entire conversation, on one side, we are talking about science, we are talking about life on other planets as such, and very casually, Swami is linking it to the existence of God. So, see, here we have a confluence of two things. On one side, we may think that these are topics purely to be dealt with science. And Swami says, where God is, life is. So there is a very beautiful synergy between spiritual approach to understanding the mystery of creation and a scientific logical approach. And in this context, I was actually trying to do a little bit of study, and I realized in the same series, 1993 series, Swami is actually talking about the different darshanas or the different philosophies in Hinduism. So he says there are actually six different darshanas, and one is, that is Nyaya school of philosophy, Vaisheshika school, Sankhya, Yoga, Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa. They approach understanding of reality in different ways. And he says the Nyaya school was started by Gautama and it is purely based on logic. And again, as I think we discussed in one of those earlier sessions, the pramanas, the different pramanas or different proofs.
Right.
How do you prove that something is existing or not existing, or what are the different pramanas? And Swami has mentioned about it. He says pratyaksha pramana, that is the direct proof. And then anumana pramana, that is by inference. Then he says upamana pramana, which is by comparison. And then shabda pramana, that is testimony of sound. So he says these are four of the main pramanas which are used. So on one side, this sounds very, very logical. But all these six forms of knowledge or all these six schools of knowledge, the different darshanas, are supposed to be theistic forms. That is, which acknowledge the presence of God. So these six forms, although you say Nyaya school is fully based on logic, it is logic, but it believes in the existence of God. And there are other schools of philosophies which do not believe, the Nastika philosophies, which do not believe in the presence of God. And the second one, which is Vaisheshika, because this is very interesting. He says this Vaisheshika philosophy deals with the atoms. And on one level, it sounds very, very scientific, because they say they go into the level of atoms and they say that every atom is different. Every atom is different, and that is why this name is called Vaisheshika, Vishesha. What is Vishesha? What is different in each atom? When you see it, yes, there is difference, but at the core of it all, it is one. The Atman is the same. So this school of philosophy started by Kanada, the sage. So he brings out this aspect that the Atman is the same, but you start seeing variations in the atoms and how each atom is different, and that is what leads to the variety in life forms everywhere. And then he says the mysteries of the inner world, and then it creates, it says, just like the entire creation, like the entire trees in the seed, so also the entire creation is contained in each atom. Now, the reason I got inspired and, you know, excited about this is that on one level, we are talking about logic. We are talking about, you know, scientific approach to this topic of life on other planets and different parameters of what is suitable for life and how we think life is. And Swami is just negating all that and saying, don't measure life only by your standards. Life can exist beyond what you can imagine. And these schools of philosophy are very scientific in their approach, but at the same time, they are theistic philosophies which acknowledge the presence of God. And that God, they attribute, is the spirit, which is the common substratum on which entire life is built.
Right. You know, talking about the pramanas, there's one school which technically it doesn't exist anymore, right? Which is the Charvarka philosophy.
Right.
They say. And if you study their philosophy, they believe only in one pramana, which is pratyaksha. I say, don't tell us about anything that is not seen.
Seen.
That is not obvious.
That comes under the Nastika.
Right, it's a Nastika. Mm. So yes. Don't talk to us about God because we don't see Him. Don't talk to us about heaven and earth, punya and papa, because it is not seen.
Mm.
And it is a purely materialistic approach to life.
Mm.
As long as you live, try to live life to the fullest and live in luxury. And you don't know what happens after death.
Right.
You don't know where you came from. You don't know whether there's another birth. There's no proof for any of this.
Mm.
Physically, that's obvious. So we will not believe in any of these things.
Mm.
And they say that that was the school which kind of dwindled and died away because it was not a logical approach to life at all.
Oh, okay.
Because inference is something that you all the time do.
Mm.
There is always inference, right? Mm. And I think in a way, Swami is referring to that inference. That whenever you talk about life, there is something that is beyond what meets your eye, which you cannot describe.
Mm.
You can call it divinity, you can call it God for the lack of any better understanding of it. And that itself is an extension that I am because there is something driving me.
Mm.
And that force which is driving me seems to be omnipresent.
Right.
So how can I deny that there can be life anywhere else?
Mm.
Right. And the whole idea of the different schools of knowledge is based on the combination of pramanas. You know, somebody believes in four pramanas, somebody believes in
correct.
Three pramanas.
Yes.
But all believe in the fact that there is certain amount of inference that goes into it. There is shabda pramana, which means that, your experience also has to be taken into consideration.
Correct.
You come and tell me that I have experienced this.
Mm.
I cannot completely deny it because I have not seen it.
Mm.
Right. And all of this put together, I think that's why when you look at Vedanta and Vedantic school, Swami would say that these are not, to call them belief systems is an understatement.
Mm.
They've all been given a lot of thought, lot of inquiry has gone into it.
Correct.
Right. And whatever Swami is saying here is actually Vedanta. Swami would say it is knowledge. It is the study of knowledge itself.
Correct.
Right. It is not merely a book, but it is an approach to how do you learn? How do you analyze? Everything goes into that, that understanding.
In fact, here when Swami says imagination can project physical evidence, it's very interesting, this line. And of course, there's a lot of science where you say you keep thinking and then it manifests, etc. But in this beautiful book called Tripura Rahasyam, which is actually considered by Ramana Maharishi as one of the very beautiful treatises on Advaitam.
Right.
Because it tries to logically explain how there is only one. Although you see diversity in that, Lord Dattatreya is actually explaining to a king. And then he explains how the entire creation is a manifestation of consciousness. And how it is at the level of consciousness, you see variety, you see all this different things, but at the core, it is all one and the same. So I think these are different books, and the Shastras and the Vedas have always spoken about this topic because it has been of interest all through. From the time man came on earth, be it the ancient sages or be it the scientists later, be it anybody, they always looked up at the night sky, looked at nature and wondered, is there a purpose to all this? Where is this coming from? Where is life? Is there life on other planets? All these topics are hot topics forever. So I think different Puranas and different texts explain this in different ways.
Right. And many of it is actually, as Swami would say, coded. Right. A story is conveying something which is so profound. As someone was saying the other day, it is not without reason that somebody like Sun God, the imagery of Sun God is he drives a chariot with seven horses.
Right.
So, which are a reference to the seven colors in the spectrum.
Mm.
Right. And all the seven horses are white.
Hmm.
Which means the seven colors coming together, makes the composite white light.
Right.
So it's all coded and it is in a very subtle manner convey some of these things.
The great sages thought that would be enough for the common man. Just because like everything is symbolic. Like Swami would say, the form of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, everything is so symbolic. Like here he says, for a frog, the Lord would appear like a giant frog. Like for humans, we have give a form to the Lord with four hands and with control over space and time and power and the heart. So these are all symbolic depictions of God, but the fact remains that it is a mystery.
Right. And actually, the conversation doesn't end here. There's another interesting addition to this conversation where Swami is saying that there are no UFOs, it's only imagination. But I think we'll just take a quick break, dear listeners. On the other side of it, we will continue this conversation and exchange that's happening between Dr. Hislop and Swami. Welcome back, dear listeners. We were discussing about a conversation that Hislop was having with Swami, where he was talking about UFOs, where he says that there are many reports of the government having laid their hands on some of these material which are supposed to be from alien spaceships and things like that. But Swami completely dismisses everything and he says everything is imagination. And sometimes imagination can even project physical evidence. And Swami says there is life in every place and those societies have their own cultures. They have absolutely no interest in what is happening on earth and they don't come and visit here. And then Hislop says, Swami, I hold your reply to... Then Swami, I should reply to people that despite all evidence cited to the contrary that UFOs and alien visitors, the whole thing is a product of imagination and imagination only. Just confirming you, Swami saying there is no problem. And Swami says you can enjoy the praise. And I'm not sure, maybe that's a little sarcastically Swami saying that, you know...
For having made this claim.
Right. Having made this claim, people will laugh at me. Literally, that's what I think Hislop is saying. That Swami, I'll be ridiculed for dismissing all these evidence. And people want to believe in such things, right? Nobody has seen a UFO. But people would want to come and claim and they will throw all these names and names of institutions. No, NASA has found like this.
Right. You know,
the Pentagon has this. And we would rather believe in those things which we will never see in this lifetime. Right? We have never been to NASA. We have never seen these evidences ourselves. But we are ready to repose complete faith on that.
Right.
But then when you say God is, then we will say, where is he? Give me all the proof, all the pramanas. Right. So Swami is saying that, yeah, just deny it. Your faith is, you believe in Swami's words and you deny all of that. And then Swami is saying you can enjoy the praise or the ridicule, whatever be it. And that's what I was saying, that this leads to an interesting exchange where Hislop says, but Swami, I do not. Meaning that I do not enjoy it, nor do I get disturbed, be it the praise or the ridicule. So he says, there is no person there to receive the praise. There is only a void. No person is found. And then Swami says, you do not have to receive the praise. Regard it as part of the impersonal stream of happenings that you see. And Hislop says, that which I observe is not me. Swami says, exactly. So I think even to understand this exchange should be in certain level. But, it's a very subtle and important thing that Swami is saying here. When you play a role, I think you just be there. Yes, if you're being praised, you receive the praise. If you're being ridiculed, you receive the ridicule. Right? Don't get too involved in that. And I think when you get involved is when it starts... in a way, dictating your actions, dictating your choices. Swami says, you just be there and receive it. There's nothing wrong in somebody praising you. Yeah, it's a praise. And somebody ridiculing you, it's a ridicule. That's it. There's nothing. You don't have to get involved or be moved or disturbed by that.
That's what this also stems from, the question of who you really are, what you are, and what they call the witness. You start witnessing your life, you start witnessing things, events that are happening. And very beautifully, some of the masters have said, just as you do not involve, you do not have any role to play in the digestion that happens within your body. Like, you take the food and after that the digestion happens on its own. You are not sitting there behind each of those skin cells and pushing the hair to grow. You have no role to play in the growing of nails, in the growing of your hair. It happens on its own. So also, he says, actually, in reality, everything is happening on its own. But we believe that we are doing it. So the more and more you start having this attitude of a witness and you start seeing, you'll realize that life goes on. whether it is your actions or your words or what you're supposed to do next, everything happens on its own. We are under the illusion that we affect it and we make it happen.
Right. And there is this beautiful story which is often narrated of this saint who is living in the outskirts of a village and probably in silence most of the time would not speak much, and anybody comes by he would bless them and earn the reverence of the whole village. Mm-hmm. So everybody would look at him as, you know, our village's deity. Almost to that state they had raised him. And it so happens that there was this unwed girl in the village belonging to one of the fishermen's community there. And she suddenly turns out that she becomes pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody gets very upset because, you know, this is a pregnancy out of wedlock. And so they come and they shout at her and they say, who is responsible for this? You know, who has misbehaved with you? And she says that sannyasi who is in the outskirts of the village. Mm-hmm. So the entire village lands up in his hut and they drag him out and they beat him up. And this man looks at them and then they say that, you know, you have misbehaved with this young girl and all that. And they look at him and say, no, she is your responsibility. Now you have to take care of her. He says, okay.
Hmm.
So they leave her in the hut and they go away. So he kind of takes care of that girl and the child that is born to that girl. And for a few months it goes on like this. So everybody who goes past that hut now, they feel that this guy is a crook. He's a cheat.
Hmm.
So he behaved like he's a sannyasi and now see what he's done and all that.
Hmm.
He's totally not bothered about any of that. A year goes by and then this girl becomes very guilty.
Mm.
And so she goes back to her village and she says, I'm really sorry, I lied. He was not responsible for the child.
Mm.
And then she says that there is a man who comes from the nearby village. He comes for some business and he's the young man who's responsible for this. And then the whole village again comes and they all fall at his feet and say, hey, really sorry we've done this.
Mm.
He says, okay, you want to take the girl and the child? Okay, take her. So then they say, you know, are you not disturbed by it? He says, you came and you revered me. I was not moved by that. Then you came and ridiculed me. He said, okay, that is also part of the, you know, drama. And now you're coming and again saying that, no, I am not responsible for it. I said, okay, that is also part of the drama. So I think, you know, he was what he was because of that. That
Correct.
Ability to stay. And we know how difficult it is. Right? We all are striving to reach that state. As Swami would say, that even the slightest ridicule that enters your ear, your peace of mind is disturbed.
Correct.
And we all are witness to that.
Absolutely.
Right?
Swami himself, in fact, used to say, some people say I'm Buttatala Baba, some people say I'm Battatala Baba. Buttatala Baba means Baba with a basket-like hair. Right. With a hair which is like in the shape of a basket. He says, it's true.
Right, how can
So what? Then some people say, Battatala Baba. They say, you're actually bald. You don't have real hair. This is a wig. And he says, that is not true. So it is not affecting me.
Right.
And some of these things, everything is interrelated. And how by these practices, when you start living your life like this, it's more like a witness attitude. You start having a witness attitude. Okay, this entity or this person has a particular destiny which he is fulfilling or she is fulfilling, and life goes on. But then you, in reality, are the self. In fact, there is a very beautiful letter in 1974, Krishna Janmashtami message. Swami is writing to the students. Swami is saying, who are you? He says, you are the self. You are not what others tell you or what people talk about you. You are not this. You are not limited to this or that. And then the last part he says, you appear as the smiling flower, as the twinkling stars. What is there in this world which can make you desire anything? What a statement, isn't it? So he says, you are not restricted. You are not limited to this one entity that you call as yourself. Like here also when Hislop is saying, I don't want that praise. That which I observe is not me. So he says, the real me is just observing that entity of Hislop getting praise or blame. Then Swami says, exactly. That is right. Another very beautiful incident which comes to mind is in the Ramana Ashram, when they are actually building a new hall, mm-hmm. when they're building a new hall and they want him, because that's more comfortable, they want him to sit there. And then he says, but then if I sit in the hall, I'll be moving away from the peacocks and from the monkeys and from the squirrels. Mm. They cannot come into that hall. The first, initially where he was sitting was more open. And he said he wanted to be available to everybody. Mm. He wanted to be available to everybody because the real he was part of everybody, of the entire creation. He didn't look at his particular body as separate from the entire creation. It was more like, I am a part of this creation. We all are part of the same thing. And so he was saying that sense of, impersonal unity. Like you are not limiting yourself to this person. So even as Hislop is saying, that which I observe is not me, yet drishyam tad nashyam. That's what I said, what you observe. But the actual you is the spark, a divine spark present in all creation, right. Present in all living forms.
So that's what I was saying, this whole section is so beautiful in that sense. It seamlessly goes from being scientific, talking about scientific Correct. Facts and creation elsewhere and life elsewhere, to the most fundamental spiritual concepts about that beingness.
Right.
Divinity is that beingness. Swami would say, that Sat Chit Ananda. Swami would say that is the basis of everything else. Every being is that. Swami speaks of that, the other three things, Asti, Bhati, Priyam, Rupam, Namam.
Yes.
Swami would say these five only define any living being.
Right.
And in that, Asti, Bhati, Priyam is the divine aspect, which is equivalent to Sat Chit Ananda, the beingness. It's the fundamental spiritual concept. So right. Swami speaks of that. And then Swami so effortlessly speaks about, just conveying that this is the truth that Swami says, you convey it. Whatever people say, many times we experience this, when you are talking about a certain concept which Swami has spoken of, people will completely disagree with you. That's between you and Swami, right? I am only coming here and conveying what Swami has said in a discourse, or Swami has written about, especially there are some concepts which are, when it comes to gender equality, or some of these concepts, which in the modern world, people have very strong opinions about. You just say that this is what Swami has told in a discourse. Whether you want to accept it or not, it's between you and Swami. I have nothing to do with that,
right?
And I think as a person who is conveying that, sometimes it becomes very important to what Swami is saying here, just to be in that witness state. Mm. You don't try to soften the blow, trying to, play to the gallery sometimes. Correct. You just have to pass it on with as least interference as possible. And that can be possible only if you're able to live in that state of being a witness. Being unmoved by criticism or by praise.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So very effortlessly Swami goes from practical spirituality to science to hardcore Advaita, everything so effortlessly in that conversation.
Right.
I think the next part is about very beautiful and simple interaction between Hislop and Swami, some materializations. Hislop asks a question. When Swami said he would give me strong sight, what sight did Swami mean? And then Swami says, all sight, physical sight and wisdom too. I will see that you are dependent on no one of either physical sight or wisdom. Wisdom.
Beautiful.
What a beautiful and profound blessing that is.
Mm.
Then Hislop says, Swamiji, is there an encouraging word for her illness that I can tell Victoria? So I think this is Victoria Hislop.
Right.
So Hislop's wife, I think she was also aging at that time, undergoing some health problem. So he asks, is there an encouraging word for her illness that I can tell Victoria? Then Baba, moving his hand, creates a lingam. And he says, see, this has two different halves. One half is for your eyes, the other half is for your wife's illness. There's nothing wrong with the body's mechanism. It is an infection only, put a little water on the lingam and drink the water. Place a drop of water in your eyes also.
Mm.
Right? Just a loving gesture of Swami's blessings. Then Hislop says, Swamiji, at this very moment, now, I abandon life, concepts, and individuality. I pray there will be no need for another birth.
Mm.
Right? What more can you pray for? But again, this is something that only Swami can tell. Right? Swami says, another birth is best for you.
Don't forget, I am the script writer. I am the creator of this. I mean, what a decision to make.
And imagine, this is coming after this entire discussion of what is the purpose of life.
Right.
To going back to your source.
Mm.
And what better way? The source is sitting right in front of you. And I think Hislop is slightly trying to, you know, pass in this prayer that, Swami, let this be the last birth for me. Let me merge in you.
Mm.
But Swami, in all his loving kindness, Swami says, another birth is best for you.
Mm.
And Hislop says, Swami, no freedom yet? Swami says, yes, another birth is best. In that you will get total final liberation.
My God.
Mm. Right? Who else can say this with confidence?
Exactly.
Right?
it's just unbelievable when Swami just, you know, makes these statements like a casual thing. Like the other thing which comes to mind is when Swami brought back the Walter Cowan from the dead. You know, so when Swami was in Madras at that time, Swami just went into the hospital, the doctors had declared him dead, and Swami brought him back to life. And then I think Professor Kasturi or somebody asked Swami, Swami, why did you do it? Why did you choose Walter Cowan to bring him back from the dead? So many people are dying. Why? Then the answer that Swami gives is most stunning. Swami says, see, poor Elsie, that is Elsie Cowan is his wife. I didn't want her carrying back a dead body from India to all the way to the US. So I brought him back to life. I mean, on one side it is so much compassion, but it is infinite power. It is in his hands. He can do anything at any point in time. For any reason, like you may not understand, like now Swami is saying, another birth is best for you. Who has control over this birth and death, and who has control over all this except God himself?
Right. And so very casually Swami says that, you know, there you will find final liberation.
Exactly.
But one more birth is good for you.
Hmm.
And then his lips says, but Swami, I don't want to go through youth again. Youth is not a good experience. It is dangerous and difficult. You know, we hear about these many Puranic stories where you would find somebody who is in the service of the Lord, who is in the heavens, who is in Vishnu Loka or Shiva Loka, and something they do and they end up with a curse.
Right.
Where they said, you'll go and be born in earth, you'll take a human life. And they would say this, you know, we are so scared of a human birth because there are so many distractions in a human life.
Correct.
We will get lost in it. There's, I think, another Puranic story where Narada is born as a pig.
Yes, yes. Swami narrates that.
Correct. Right? The great Narada, with all his knowledge, with all the Namasmarana and the value that he knows of all these things, is born as a pig and he's so lost in that life with his pig family and piglets. Right? Because that is the power of Maya.
Right.
And the power of Maya is maximum in this period of youth. Where you say that, you know, the body is in its prime of its youth. Whatever you eat seems to be getting digested.
Correct.
And enormous energy. You're able to do all kinds of things.
Mm.
And still the body seems to be withholding everything. And that's the stage where maximum wrong can be done.
Mm.
Because there's a delayed response. Right? As you go to the second half of your life, the body's response is a little more real.
Correct.
You eat more, the body immediately shows a reaction to that. You overdo action, the body shows pain.
Right.
But youth is the time when there's a delayed response, and so you're eligible to do a lot of mistakes in that period. So someone like Hislop, who has keenly observed life, I think he says, Swami, youth is very dangerous. I fear going through youth again.
Mm.
Swami says, don't worry, it will be better life than this one. If Hislop's life can be better than someone who has had the opportunity to be so close to Swami. Swami right. saying this will be a better life than this one. The next one will be a better life than this one. Don't waste time thinking of future. Again, a very beautiful statement. Swami says, leave that to me. Mm. You made a prayer. I've told you. Don't worry about the future. Then I think again, Swami asks, where is that lingam? Mm. That Swami had just materialized. And Swami, he hands it back to Swami. Swami took the lingam and showed it to the others in the room. Then the lingam disappeared from Swami's hand and a Shiva Shakti symbol was there.
Mm-hmm.
Then Swami said, this is the beginning and the end. It's very sacred. Mm. The base is Shakti and the remainder is Shiva. Would you like the lingam or this? And then Hislop says, Swami, how can I choose? I don't know enough. Then the Shiva the Shakti Shiva symbol was gone. The lingam reappeared and Baba handed it back to me. Swami said, you did not make up your mind. You waited too long. Right. And then Hislop says, just before bringing forth the Shakti Shiva symbol, Baba asked me if I would prefer a large lingam. I replied, I don't know. Swami knows what I need. He must decide. Then after this Shiva Shakti was taken away from me and after some further conversation with the other men present, there was a moment of silence. Then I said, Swami, cannot I have both the lingam and the Shakti Shiva? Then Swami laughed and poking me on the forehead, Swami said, both? You are greedy. Then he settled back in his chair, smiling, then moving his hand. There again was the Shakti Shiva symbol. He held it out to me, smiling, and said, see, this is the wish-fulfilling tree. Whatever you wish for, you may have.
Mm.
So very beautiful and small interaction
right.
there. You know, Swami is saying, Swami would say, I'm here to take care of your physical well-being as well as your spiritual well-being. In one hand, Swami is saying that you need one more birth. In that birth, I will grant you liberation.
Mm.
On the other hand, Swami is also addressing the ill health of his wife, also speaking about his sight, which is probably failing at that point in time.
Right.
And also, you know, the desire of receiving something from Swami's hand. Swami plays a small game, takes it back. How many times we have seen this. For whatever reason Swami is doing, you know, as inscrutable as his creation is the creator himself. I recall one of my classmates, suddenly one day Swami called him. Swami was standing in the portico and talking to all of us. Swami called him and asked about his father, who is an army officer and all that. And then Swami materialized and gave him a green ring,
mm-hmm.
right? A green gem, which Swami usually gives. And he was very happy. Swami blessed him. The next day Swami comes and Swami asks, hey, where is that ring? And Swami takes it. And then Swami says, green, do you like green or do you like white? Mm. He says, Swami, whatever you give. And then Swami converts it into a white diamond ring and gives it to him. He's happy. The third day again Swami comes. Converts it back into a green diamond ring and gives. So you never know why all this Swami does. Yeah, I think you just have to enjoy when it happens.
Just a game that is divine leela, that's all. Right. Nothing else.
So I think that's all. It's a very beautiful exchange that is happening.
In fact, when you go through this and, you know, when you're seeing this, the state in which Dr. Hislop is in and the way he's speaking to Swami, I just remember the last interview
mm-hmm.
of Hislop, which was done when his health was failing and he was at home. One of the devotees from Hollywood, Gene Massey, who mm-hmm. used to come here and also shoot regularly.
Right.
So he had gone to his house and he has a recording of John Hislop speaking towards the last, I think, last few days of his life. A lot of, his body failings and all that, a lot of physical problems. But he says his eyes were glowing. And the moment he utters Swami's name, his face would glow.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else mattered. He was kind of confined to the bed and so many things. But the moment he uttered Swami's name, he said he would like literally glow. And he was in that constant remembrance of Swami. And like you can see when Swami is talking about one more birth is required for you. But even this birth, at that stage, towards the end of his life, he constantly thinking of Swami, constantly thinking of all the things that had happened between him and Swami. And I think there is that recording which is very, very powerful. Of course, he's not in the best of health, but you can see that the moment he thinks of Swami, there's a constant connect with him and Swami.
Right, very similar to Professor Kasturi's last days, right?
Right.
That episode that he himself narrates, there's one astrologer or a Nadi reader who comes.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami is talking to him. Professor Kasturi is also there. And then Swami says, you tell for Professor Kasturi.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Imagine, here is Swami, the knower of the past, present and future. And here is an astrologer. And Swami is telling you, tell him. And I don't know whether you looked at his palm or Nadi or what it is.
Mm.
One of the things that he tells Professor Kasturi is, according to my prediction, you should experience Nirvikalpa Samadhi in mm-hmm. this life.
Oh.
And it seems Professor Kasturi laughs out. And he says, Swami, where is Nirvikalpa Samadhi? And, you know, I'm a householder. Where is that? I mean, I don't do any sadhana. And Swami says, you never know. You know, very casually, you never know, Kasturi, you might experience it. And all that. No, but really, if you look at it, towards the last few days of his life, there was nothing, no thought other than, it started off with the physical thought of, will Swami come and visit me?
Mm.
Because he was not able to go for darshan, will Swami come? So every footstep, every time somebody would knock at the door, every time he would hear a sound, he would get up and say, Swami, come.
Mm.
It started off as a physically looking out for Swami's presence.
Mm.
And then it turned out to be an enormous craving for Swami. Nothing but thinking of Swami. He would only think of Swami. Till a point came where, suddenly his grandson was, attending to him. His mother was standing outside, I think, during the Guru Purnima festival or something around that time. The grandson comes running and says, something is wrong with grandfather. He's telling something very weird.
Mm-hmm.
The Padma Kasturi auntie asks, what happened? What is he saying? And she goes inside and Kasturi is telling, Kasturi is dead. Kasturi is dead.
Oh.
I am only Atma now.
My God.
Mm. He says, I am no more. I am no more.
Mm.
And apparently after that point, even the craving for Swami is gone.
Mm.
Right? And he says, don't give me food anymore. Don't take care of, do anything for me. Kasturi is not there anymore. He says, go and tell everybody that Kasturi is dead.
Oh.
And so actually what Swami was telling, that Nirvikalpa Samadhi was being experienced.
Experienced. In fact, I think in this book, in this conversations only, Swami says that in the state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you can stay only for 21 days.
Right.
He says 21 days and below that, the body cannot sustain for more than 21 days in that state of bliss.
Right.
So I'm sure Swami must have blessed him with that.
Mm. So I think there's just a last portion of this book. Maybe it'll be too much to read out the whole thing. We will probably reserve it for the next time.
Right.
And maybe if we finish the whole thing quickly, we can probably just go back and if there's some interesting conversations which we have already covered, some highlights which we would like to probably just revisit, maybe we'll do that. If at all we finish earlier, maybe we can do that.
Right, right.
And with that, dear listeners, this entire book is coming to an end. We'll be completing these conversations. I don't know, we've maybe gone through it for the past 2-3 years at least. It's a long book.
Right.
And very, very fulfilling to go through the whole thing. So we'll conclude with that, dear listeners. We're going to leave you with a song. On the other side of it, the rest of the programs will continue. Hopefully we'll come back next week to conclude this book, Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Satyasai Baba. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet, and we thank you all for your patient listening.
Bah chudaye jaat ho nibal jaan ke mo hirday se jab jao to sabal mein jaanu to he giridhar gopal karuna singh असल सब के संबल मोह को ले ओ संभाल हरि मैं नैन तुम नैना हरि मैं नैन तुम नैना निर्बल के बल दीन के बंधो निर्बल के बल दीन के बंधो वचन सुन के बैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना थामूं गरिया जौन डगरिया ले चालो मोहे जानो तुम्हारे शरण में तुम्हारे शरण में अब मेरो ठोर ठिकानो गोपाल गोपाल अपने पतित को बैगे उबारो अपने पतित को बैगे उबारो नाम रटो दिन रैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना दर्शन से सुख बिन दर्शन दुख प्रभु मेरो मन वापावे तुम देखे मेरो सूरज उगे तुम बिछड़े छुप जावे गोपाल गोपाल हरि तुम ही आंधे की लकुटिया हरि तुम ही आंधे की लकुटिया तुम ही जिया को बैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हे गिरिधर गोपाल श्यामा दीन दयाल भक्त वत्सल सबके संबल मुकुले